This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast, and today I'm going to be talking a little bit about Mao Zedong's 100 Flowers campaign of 1957. The reason I'm going to be talking about this is I think it has an important relevance to the way we look at not just Chinese politics during the Maoist era, but also the relationship between Maoism and Soviet communism, which is a complex one, and one which has real sort of bearing on, particularly on the inner workings of Maoism in the 1950s. And with that in mind, before we look at Mao, we need to look at Khrushchev and Khrushchev's secret speech of 1956, which is really the thing that triggers the political events in China in 1957. Khrushchev, as we've already seen, did a podcast a while back on the secret speech, denounced Stalin 3 years after his death in 1956. There's a special session at the 20th Party Conference, or Congress, I beg your pardon, which is reserved only for senior party members, and foreign party members are excluded, and so are foreign journalists. And Khrushchev denounces the legacy of Stalin. The effect this has on Mao, when Mao eventually hears about it sometime later, is deeply alarming to him. Mao looks upon himself as Stalin's protege in China, and really had introduced many of the kind of the standard aspects of Stalinism, from forced collectivization to five-year plans to slave labor camps, the destruction of China's bourgeoisie, and a war against the intelligentsia and the China's intellectuals. These were all lifted directly from sort of Stalin's playbook, and were even pursued when Stalin was suggesting tactical withdrawals and tactical kind of abandonments of certain aspects of his own doctrine. Mao really tried to be kind of to out Stalin in a way. So the secret speech itself has huge repercussions across the communist world. It has incites an uprising in Hungary, and it has a huge effect on Mao's regime. And by 1956, the economic problems that the communists have claimed to be able to deal with at the end of the Civil War haven't been alleviated. In fact, for many people, they are far, far worse. The historian Frank Dakota, of whom I've mentioned before, says that probably about 5 million people died in the period 1945 to 1956-57, largely at the hands of the communists, either through execution or famine. the social revolution that Mao attempts to impose upon China has bloody and horrific consequences, and the revolution can in some ways be summarised as an attempt to sweep away the existing structures of Chinese society, so that essentially one primary relationship remains, and that is the relationship between the individual and the state. This is obviously never fully realised, though in many instances it comes very close. And by 1956, the Communist Party has become extremely unpopular. The Communist Party has been seen amongst not only the peasants but also workers in the cities as not the source of their liberation but the source of much of their misery. And the implications amongst the intelligentsia of Khrushchev's secret speech and amongst other party members is clear. And we learned some interesting stuff here about Mao's position, in that the official organs of the party, party newspapers and other media, which were the time-honoured ways in communist China of articulating the party and Mao's views and indicating to the people that change was in the air, they start to distance themselves from some of the tenets of Maoist thinking, and they start to distance themselves from what appears to have been the development of a cult of personality. And Mao himself becomes increasingly isolated. This is something that we tend not to take into account when we think of dictators like Stalin or Hitler or Mao, that periodically they can become potentially vulnerable figures to the parties, the organs, and the institutions of state that surround them. They can become isolated and, as I said, and vulnerable. And in this period of time, this is precisely what happens to Mao. Mao's strategy is to attempt to use the people against the bureaucracy. So Mao feels threatened by bureaucracy. He feels threatened by echelons of the party, and he has a very canny strategy. Kind of backfires on him, as we'll see, but it's 10 out of 10 for trying. He basically says, sure, yeah, okay, we've made mistakes. By we, I mean the party. The party's made mistakes. The party, similarly to what's happened in Hungary, he says, the party has failed to listen to the people. We have failed to fully grasp what the people want, and at times we've become too authoritarian, too high-handed. We have become too much focused on what the party thinks is right. He said of Hungary, by the way, he said that the Hungarians were at risk of confusing legitimate dissent with the troublemaking mischief of the West, of the British and the Americans and all the and the capitalist powers, who were no doubt sending their secret agents over there to stir up discontent. And he then says to the party, you're the same, by the way. You've been guilty of essentially ignoring the legitimate wants of the people, which is, of course, as we know, an astounding act of political hypocrisy on Mao's part, because the majority of the most oppressive and violent policies really emanate directly from himself, from his own ideas, whims, beliefs, and his own dictates to people like Chiu Enlai and Deng Xiaoping. In order to facilitate this move against the party, whom he now feels threatened by, he encourages the open expression of dissent. He encourages the open expression of dissent from the public and from various bodies and institutions that he has oppressed in the past. The explosion of anger from the peasants, from workers who attack party cadres in the villages and in towns and cities, and who, within the workers' case, go and strike and threaten open revolt, really astounds Mao. Mao spends his days in the inner sanctum of the Communist Party, a place called Zhongnanhai, and is very much cut off from the rest of the world. He has little dealings directly with China, per se, and is understandably none the wiser about how the Chinese people are likely to react, and deluded in much in a way that Hitler had become deluded and slightly divorced from reality, as Hitler was at the end of the war, as to the experience of ordinary Chinese people, which had been nothing short of horrific in many, many cases. Mao sparks much of the opening up of dissent when he makes a speech called in the start of 1957.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
February, entitled On the Correct Handling of Contradictions Among the People. And this was really a speech that explored what he viewed as being the failings of the revolution, and now the idea that it was going to be okay for ordinary Chinese people to speak out. Frank Dakota argues really that the 100 Flowers campaign, as it comes to be known, Mao essentially says, let a hundred flowers bloom, let 100 schools contend, let's have a diversity, a range of ideas. Mao didn't think that this would involve a flowering of oppositional ideas. He thought it would create a support base amongst the population against the party, and so that Mao could reach out beyond the party machine to the public, who would help him really tame the party back under his control. And Frank Dakota says this was essentially a strategy, and it doesn't work. The view of Jung Chang, who wrote the famous book Wild Swans, she says, in essence, from her point of view, it was simply a ruse to root out oppositional people, the counter-revolutionary types, whom Mao was waging an eternal war against anyway. I think, I'm probably leaning more towards Frank Dakota on this one. I think that what we tend to do when we look at dictators is credit them with too much evil genius, too much tactical savvy. And they are often people who try different initiatives, things don't work, things do work, and they attempt to make political gambles, and they backfire. A thing that all these figures have in common, Mao, Hitler, Stalin, Khomeini, you name them, is that they tend to have a kind of innate ability to quickly scramble to shore up their position, to rectify mistakes or to undo things that have gone wrong. And I think this is what happens in this case. In the beginning, in 1956, of the new mood of openness and criticism, the state doesn't appear to come in for much open criticism to start with anyway. And so Mao has a word with Chiu Enlai, who is then encouraged via the bureaucracy to incentivize the Chinese intelligentsia to speak out. These are people who have been absolutely broken by the previous decade of communist rule. The arrest, imprisonment, torture, and execution of countless intellectuals was accompanied by public denunciations and thought meetings where intellectuals were forced to endure hours, sometimes even days, of criticism from party members and members of the public, or forced to recant their views and publicly denounce themselves for hours and hours and hours, which is a physically and mentally breaking thing. And so it's understandable that they might be a bit reticent to venture forth with their opinions on the party. By early 1957, Mao has essentially said that it is required that intellectuals and in the intelligentsia criticise, and indeed that there is something suspect about those who do not. And if those who do not direct their criticism against the bureaucracy and against the party, there might be questions about their suitability as citizens in the new China. So this leaves the intelligentsia in a quandary, and many begin the process of speaking out, though there are several who are still extremely cautious. It's perhaps when the flow of criticism becomes a deluge and involves public demonstrations, and particularly focuses on the venality and the corruption of the party, that Mao starts to say that there is essentially legitimate and illegitimate criticism, and the illegitimate criticism really outweighs that which is acceptable or allowed. And this is where Mao and then Deng Xiaoping begin to have serious misgivings about what's happening, and believe that the genie must now be put back into the bottle. And Deng Xiaoping says, this must be done with considerable violence too. When the crackdown came, it was referred to as an anti-rightist campaign. So the legitimate criticisms of the Communist Party that had been encouraged by Mao were now labelled as rightist counter-revolutionary thought. And Mao lost no time in galvanising groups of party activists and secret policemen to arrest intellectuals who were espousing offending ideas, and to arrange mass trials and the deportation to labour camps of those who were considered to be the worst offenders. The process of the 100 Flowers campaign and the anti-rightist campaign that follows it, appears to have greatly shaken Mao. It appears to have shown Mao that he could be vulnerable and that the public could not particularly be trusted if you let them off the leash. And it also puts Mao in a rather difficult position regarding the rest of the party, because he's shown this lack of judgment throughout the campaign and throughout the reactionary crackdown that follows it, and needs to really have an initiative that puts him back in charge, that gives him control of events and control of party policy once more. And this emerges in the guise of the Great Leap Forward, which was Mao's attempt to thrust China using centralised economic planning and production targets and quotas into the top tier of economic nations. And the result is an economic and humanitarian catastrophe, which dwarfs really anything else in the 20th century, with perhaps as many as 45 to 50 million who dead from starvation by the early 1960s. This is obviously the topic for a slightly later podcast, but it's important to see, I think, the relationship between things such as the 100 Flowers campaign and the Great Leap Forward as a kind of continuum of kind of catastrophe politics within the People's Republic of China that begin in 1949 and you'd like to think end in 1976 when Mao dies, but unfortunately limp on for a good while after that. Anyway, I hope you find this useful, and I will be recording my customary annual exam advice, tips and helps podcast in the next few days or so. So if you're studying your A-levels, if you're the big day is drawing near, stay tuned and I will hopefully have some words of comfort for you as we draw close. And in the meantime, try not to stress, eh? Next up on the podcast, to be recorded later in the week, is going to be a review of Richard Crowder's brilliant book, Aftermath, The Making of the Post-War World Up to 1945, and a discussion of the Atlantic Charter meeting between Churchill and Roosevelt at Placentia Bay. Big thanks to everyone that's been supporting the podcast so far. We hit the golden figure of 35,000 yesterday, so go us. Anyway, I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.